Wait. We're back with another episode of the Big Kahuna Podcast with me, Conor Muldoon.
Myself, Blair Kenny.
Welcome back, guys. We're back here with our 18th episode.
And our zestiest intro, I think.
Was it zesty?
Yeah.
It was a little bit zesty.
Just on the 18th. Nothing wrong with it, though.
Sorry. On the 18th hole. So, part two of the Christopher Nolan saga. Of the two-part saga. This is the one where it's going to get a little bit juicy.
I hope so.
We're going to rank...
Post-2010. Nolan.
Not far off, yeah. So, we're going
to... Well, it is.
So, in the last one, just to recap, we went over the prior part of the of his career. Talked about the Dark Knight trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about Insomnia, Memento. And now we're getting into latter stage Christopher Nolan. So we got some whoppers here, whoppers with cheese. And we're going to be talking about them. A few clips, few snips.
Some very interesting facts.
Yeah.
And, as per usual.
With the facts man, Byron Kenny. Do you know what? I'm going to be positive with you today. I could be negative.
Go on. I
could hang you out to dry for not recording in 3 weeks, but...
Please
I'm
explain
not
do, that.
I'm not going to do
Please
that.
Please explain that.
I'm not going to do that.
Why not?
Well, I think it's only fair to explain to the listeners why there hasn't been a podcast in almost 3 weeks now.
Life got in the way.
Life got in the way.
For both of us.
No, for you!
It's a two-man show here.
Exactly, yeah. And you can't record a podcast with one man.
Clearly.
So, yeah, even if I'd wanted to. But anyways.
Even when I'm free, but look.
Oh, okay. Just to get that out there, I think that needed to clear the
air. Is that off your chest? Yeah.
It is. I don't think there's much... Like...
Grow up.
Ooh, that's going to be a tasty one, ladies and gentlemen. I think there's a few things we're going to disagree on today in terms of our ranking, maybe. I've already noted a few films that are lower down in my...
Yeah, I'm just going to make my list off the cuff because I'm just the more organic of the two of us.
Fair enough, okay. You know? We're coming right in, we're swinging. Coming in swinging. All right, okay. So, before we get into it, any news, any crack with you?
Exams
coming up soon.
We're in the midst of the exams there.
Fruitful college career about to end.
It's on the horizon.
Fruitful in so many ways. Few weeks now.
Yeah.
It's all going to be kaput.
What are you going to do, man?
Yeah.
Everything must come to an end, like.
Some big things lined up, though, you know.
A few trips away ahead. Incoming. Planned.
Planned and incoming.
At Oisin DO3, yeah. Instagram.
Out in Zagreb.
Living it up, I hope.
Hope so, yeah. Seems to be, anyway.
Yeah, if you'd ever talk to us, that guy.
I love how we bring him up in every episode, and he probably doesn't miss it. But if you
I'm just throwing a bit of shade at you, Oisin, for not listening.
Possibly, yeah. But, you know, he's living life over there. He's having the crack.
Sunny Croatia, yeah.
Yeah.
Club's open till 5.
Yeah,
very cheap drink.
Yeah.
Always sunny this time of year over there.
Always sunny in Zagreb, yeah. So we hope he's...
Yeah, hopefully he's got that big bald head of him tanned up.
His hair is growing out, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, from recent photos, I believe.
Trip over to Turkey, do you think?
Possibly, yeah. The hairline looks a little bit better as well.
A bit
well.
Washed, like, you know.
Yeah, a little bit less greasy. Anyways, throwing shade at you, you bald asshole, Oisin Davenport.
Who?
That guy from Donegal.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Cormac Layden as well is looking for a zesty episode. We'll see. I'm going to try and be nice to you today.
Oh, please do.
But, thanks for asking me about myself.
Sure, you just explained it. Oh no, we cut the recording in the last one when you were explaining that, but okay. How are you anyway?
Been a bit lonely the last few weeks. Girlfriend hasn't been here over in Dubai.
How is she getting on?
Getting the raise. She's good. She got a good tan. She got a Rolex as well, actually, so.
Oh.
Big money moves. But yeah, she's having the crack.
Good experience. Great fitness.
Good
day out.
Good couple of weeks out. We're looking out over a beautiful... Beautiful sunset here. Even though Byron usually wants to close the blinds.
When have I ever said that?
You did say that in prior episodes. But I suppose we've got an episode to record here.
Yeah, we're just dragging it out here, are we?
Is there any other news briefs you'd like to...
The eclipse was on today.
Was it?
Solar eclipse, yeah.
Okay.
I was watching the live stream there on the way over.
So we're going to come out in some weird shit over
there. It's just another eclipse.
Just another eclipse.
Yeah.
Can you see it or what?
Man, it was like an hour ago. And they were in Mexico while they were live streaming it, so...
Okay. It's not much of a news brief, so...
I know, there was something special about this one, right? There always is.
Yeah. Okay.
You know NASA, what they're up to. Speaking of NASA...
Go on.
And then we just pull it up. Basically, NASA worked on the first film we're going to talk about today.
Okay.
Interstellar.
Let me see. No, I don't want to go like that. I think we should do this chronologically.
Oh, here we go now.
Start off with the Prestige, maybe.
Why is this okay, it's better.
Do you even know what you're looking at?
No, because this book, can we call it a diary?
Leonardo da Vinci, man, I write it backwards. That's what I do. So you can't read it.
And extremely unlegible, like himself.
Unlegible. Right, let me see. Let's get into this now. Cause
I said Interstellar. We're going to go with Interstellar.
Can I start with Interstellar?
Yeah.
Coming with a heavy hitter. Okay. Do you want to start off with your factoid just to get the...
Factoid. Okay.
Cromloid.
Well, I'm running out of facts here.
Running out of facts? You
yeah, I'm already running out this week. Man. The big, yeah.
Go on.
But I think Interstellar is such a popular movie, like... These facts were just too beige, or just so obvious. Like, there's a fact here, but I think everyone knows about the cornfield.
Go on. Well, just refresh me, right. So who don't know about it.
Well, it's just fucking reference to the movie every 10 seconds, but it's basically, you know the scene where they was McConaughey and Chalamet?
Yeah.
Were driving through the field, the cornfield, tearing it up. Yeah. Well, that wasn't CGI or anything like that. They actually...
Did that.
Yeah, they grew a crop field and sold it for profit.
Cool, isn't it?
Very Nolan-esque.
Cool factoid.
Because there was no CGI used in... I mean, that was the next film, actually. Workaway.
So, how do you start with Interstellar? It's a big film. There's a lot of...
It's like two films.
Yeah, there's like three films, really. And I've heard lots of talk that it is kind of... Like 2001 Space Odyssey. That it's been pulled a lot from that. I haven't seen that myself. Can't believe I haven't seen it yet. But there's a lot to cover with Interstellar. I think when it came out initially, that first watch, and you're like a bit perplexed, you know.
A bit like a few of his films, like Inception or Tenet.
One thing I will say about Interstellar is, even if you don't
understand what's going on
or understand it, it's such an incredible film. To watch,
yeah.
Performance-wise, score-wise, Hans Zimmer, the man.
He didn't. It's not like he didn't go over the top with the sci-fi shit, like, because he got Nobel Prize winners and physicists in, and he got the help of NASA to make it as plausible as possible.
Mm.
Like, he really wanted to play on the realism side of.
Of the film,
yeah.
And of the science physics side of things as well,
and you know, like difference of time and how they. Just the whole thing about black holes and all that sort of crap.
Yeah.
And they invented new CGI for it.
Because
they hadn't seen a black hole at the time of making it.
Really?
No. I think they only discovered a black hole there a few years ago. The first picture of it was only like 2 or 3 years ago, I think.
Would you like to have a go at explaining the premise of Interstellar?
1 second. I'm just going to reference my fact there.
Okay, buddy. Take your time, man.
Okay, work away there.
I don't really know how to start explaining it. It's...
Basically, it's a film about... Are you ready for the synopsis?
Go on.
Okay. Planet Earth is dying, essentially. And the top physicists, all the space agencies, are working together to see how they can save humanity, essentially, where they can maybe inhabit other planets and whatnot.
Yeah.
So they're trying to improve their space travel.
Earth is becoming kind of polluted by this big dust cloud, like.
Yeah, and all the crops are failing, food shortages are up through the roof, and global warming's kind of hit them. So they've only got, what, I think it's like 30, 40 years left or something before they emigrate.
Mm.
So they're trying to figure out a way to do that, and they have a few planets in mind that they could populate. So they sent, well, the premise is just to send astronauts on a basically a one-way mission to those planets, and once they get there, to see if it's habitable or not, and send a signal back to Earth, so to see if they should go there.
So for me, this film is divided into two. It's like the kind of bits where you can fathom, and we go to the planet with the time difference, and we'll pull up a clip of that in a second. And then it gets to the stage where he enters the wormhole, and he's communicating back to his daughter.
It breaks it.
Through the wormhole, and breaks this kind of physical barrier, and time becomes almost a physical entity, and he can
manipulate time,
manipulate it, and communicate with his daughter, who is millions and millions of miles.
That's where it gets kind of fucked up. He's in like a time loop.
That's where it gets confusing, and But the thing that Christopher Nolan is amazing at, and it's same in Inception as well, which I watched recently, is this emotional connection that you have, where you want to see Matthew McConaughey's character, you want to see him connect with his daughter, you want to see him. It's heartbreaking in the sense that he had to leave her in the first place, but then his redemption is that he communicates with her. She fully believed all along that he was still out there,
and he was.
And so this, through this bookcase in her room, that's how he uses Morse code, I think, in the end. Well, it's really,
but he was kind of foreshadowing it, but you just didn't really know what to look for with the scenes in the house. But like, I like the way like that they were portraying that like planet Earth was dying to like a more extreme version of what's happening now, kind of at the moment, you know. But you could just see like all these dust clouds coming in, and the way that they're working on different crops and how extreme the situation's getting, which is pretty cool.
So I think one of the standout scenes of this, what I've just alluded to there, is when they go to this planet and they're kind of orbiting, but the whole sense of time is out of sync. So
yeah,
and this is what people who have watched this film will remember quite vividly, but also if you haven't watched this film, it's incredible. So
basically they got to the planet and they sent, well, they were orbiting the planet, as you said, but they were unsure of like the time difference between them and space, Earth, and they're working at three different things here, and the time on the planet. So essentially like a minute on that planet is like 7 days or something. Something silly like that. Way more. Anyway, so they
had, like, a second is like 7 days or something.
Yeah,
like
so
that.
They had to send people down to see if it was habitable and get back up, which only took them an hour or something.
Yeah.
By the time they got back up to the guy who was piloting the ship, it'd been a lot longer than that.
So we have the clip now. Do you want to play it?
Yep.
Hello, Rob.
I've waited years.
How many years?
By now it must be.
It's 23 years, 4 months, 8 days.
Doyle?
But I was prepared. I knew the theory.
Miller.
There's nothing here for us.
There's so much unpacked there, like.
Yeah. So effectively, when they get down to the planet, it's really like, so it's a water planet basically, but these massive, they think there are mountains in the distance, but they're actually these huge waves coming to take them out. That's scary, scary.
They were there to check on the astronaut who previously was sent there, but he'd only been there, I think, 2 hours or something. And by the time they landed, it's been a few years since he left or whatever. They were only down there for an hour and come back
up. He'd only died like basically a few minutes
they landed.
So it's just a complete like Christopher Nolan
mindfuck.
We don't use bad language on this. You've already cursed 3 times.
Oh, you're counting?
Yes.
When?
We can go back and count it, don't worry. But anyways.
I'm not that petty, okay.
So Interstellar, but then there's really, I think they've Casey Affleck in the film, Jessica Chastain, who are the grown up versions of Timothy Chalamet and the daughter.
And Michael Caine.
Michael Caine as well.
He was brilliant in it.
He's very good.
I did like all those, you know, majority of us wouldn't really understand it, but they'd dumb it down, like, with all the physics scenes and they're trying to do the math.
Yeah.
And, like, the probability of people coming back before they send Matthew off. And he has to, like, think about what he's going to do for humanity. But then again, the thought of losing his family.
Yeah.
Because he knows it's a one-way mission.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a space film that just kind of reinvented what a space film could be. Because, like, we've seen lots of films, like The Martian and think Gravity with Sandra
Bullock. Before that was all, it was all kind of Star Wars and just flying around.
No, like, even just kind of...
Just playing on the realism of it all.
Slightly realistic space films don't intrigue me that much, you know? Like... That's what I like about something like Alien or something.
Apollo 11.
Like that. Yeah, something like that. Well, Apollo 11 is realistic, like, you know. But like Prometheus and Alien and stuff like that, films like those, they might be like, Prometheus isn't a perfect film. Alien is an incredible film.
Prometheus had the potential. I really like the story.
Yeah. But Alien, like, it's this really cool, scary story. So it's kind of taking space and the realism of space and adding a twist to it, and that's what I really like about Interstellar. It's just taking that to the nth degree, though. And I think
that's because, you know, it's a possible future for us all.
Yeah, exactly. And it's rooted in an emotional story as well.
Yeah,
and that's the important.
So it's like when you're watching 2012 as a kid.
Yeah.
And after watching that, you're like, oh no.
Yeah, because you really
there. It's gonna fucking explode.
Yeah. And when it is Earth, like when it's. You can kind of see this stuff happening.
Yeah.
You can see these massive dust clouds coming in and taking out farms and people's livelihoods. What do you think of McConaughey as a cast in it?
I was good. Like, the way he's portraying his emotions.
Mm.
That's his only and the films. Severity of different, like, situations as well. I thought he got that.
He just is an excellent actor. Like.
Yeah. But he's a cool dude, though.
He is a cool dude.
See, he's got a tequila company.
Mm. He's just a very chill guy.
Oh, he's so chill.
And then, forget that Matt Damon is in it as well.
You know why you might forget that?
Yes.
Let me just pull up a fact.
A factoid. Okay.
Right, let me just find it. Please, okay. Please let me find it.
Let me see, do I have any factoids myself?
Did I even include it? Oh, I didn't throw it in my facts, but I'll just... No. I got it off the cuff.
Off the top.
Basically, they wanted to keep Matt Damon a secret. So he didn't go to any press reveals. He didn't do any fucking promotion at all for the movie.
That's
he didn't
cool.
turn up to any premieres. They just kind of just showed him in the film. So that's why maybe it's hard to remember. And he was only there for like 10 or 15 minutes anyway.
That's cool. He was very important role in it though.
Huge. Because he did kind of show that like all these astronauts are not perfect. They are humans at the end of the day.
They're built up to be very, very
resilient.
Heroic.
Yeah.
And resilient. And...
courageous.
Kind of superhuman, yeah. But then he shows the real kind of human side of actually being...
Survival instinct just kicked in. He's like, fuck this.
Being abandoned.
Get me off this rock.
Mm. And he convinces... Basically, we won't ruin it for you, like, but he convinces McConaughey and Anne Hathaway, who's also in the film, that this planet is inhabitable, and he shows them all this data. Well,
that it was. He put up the green light, so that was their only hope. This planet's a green light.
But then you see that this mightn't be the case.
Didn't see that switch coming either.
It was good. It was excellent.
Oh, and then when the robot died. Right.
Yeah. It's just a really complicated film, but it's one of the genius parts of Christopher Nolan is his ability to explain it to the masses.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed, you know, when they were on the New Earth, when they made a replica of his house.
Yeah, that was cool.
But basically as a museum, as like a monument for people to take tours of and stuff.
But the only thing that I just don't understand about that film, so he gives her this data to... He gives her this data to kind of save Earth, but then flash forward and they're living in these kind of like cylinder things almost. Like, did they
Like a spaceship, man.
Is it a spaceship?
I think so. Or I think they were orbiting a planet and they were working off its gravitational pull or something. Like, I think that's why it was spinning.
That was one thing they didn't really explain.
He's running out of time. And I think our brains were turned to mush at that stage, yeah.
But it is palatable. I mean, even if it does get crazy at stages, it's
palatable. It's entry level for Nolan. Like, it does get a bit more extreme in the next film.
I think so.
Inception, man.
Inception, yeah.
I couldn't grasp that.
Really?
Whoever says they grasp it are lying.
You have to watch it a few times.
Okay, what happened in it?
Do you want to go on
could
to
you
Inception?
Explain it? Yeah, let's work away.
Inception, okay. Inception is.
Do you understand like what happened? I haven't seen it now in years, but could you like just give us a synopsis?
I've watched it very, very recently. So Inception is dreams are. It's basically bringing dreams to kind of. How do I start it off? Like dream, so you can enter dreams and you can be.
You can
be cognizant of dreams and you can be sentient.
You can influence other people.
I'm trying to understand it here.
Okay.
So effectively, so it starts off when he's in a dream with this Japanese billionaire. He's trying to steal some information from some vital information.
It's a mind heist.
For Cobalt Engineering or whatever. Cobalt Oil Company, who want to steal this information and use it for themselves. Right, so he gets found out by this Japanese billionaire, Saito, I think his name is. Saito then commissions him to, well, he doesn't force him to, but he says, so Leonardo was trying to get back to America. He says, he's exiled from America. If you can perform Inception, I will make a phone call and get you back into America, right? So Inception is, and the whole premise of the film is to create an idea, organically create an idea in someone's brain. So effectively, if I tell you something...
So you make them, you're basically trying to make them think that they've lived this memory or they're having a dream?
Yeah, so basically that they have forged this memory themselves, yeah. Right? So what they have to do basically is go into Cillian Murphy, who is this billionaire son who's just died, have to convince him to dissolve his father's company. Okay, so that's the idea.
Yeah,
and that's the whole premise of the film, is that an idea is the most powerful kind of
motivator,
affliction, whatever you want to say. So what they do is they get him sleeping. And they go into his dream world, basically. And that's what it comes down to, like, architecture of the world. So this, what's her name? Elliot Page, she's the transgender.
Why'd you smirk when he said
former,
that?
Formerly she. She was a she in the...
She was?
He was a she in the film. But anyways, I'm gonna say he creates this world.
No, it is he, because I was looking at this earlier.
Yeah, okay. He creates this world, three different levels. So they go in threefold into the dream, alright? So first level,
They just go down a rabbit hole, essentially, because they get into danger, isn't it?
Yeah, so the danger of the film is that Leonardo DiCaprio's dead wife, Marion Cotillard, is kind of sabotaging his dream. So he's like the main guy.
She's Freddy Kruegering him.
Yeah, so that's his subconscious. She is subconscious. And she comes to basically sabotage all the plans. Okay. But they have to go. So the first level of the dream, they kidnap Cillian Murphy. Then the next level of the dream, he's in a hotel. And so they kind of have to go deeper and deeper. And then by the third level of the film... it's at this fortress, basically, this snowy fortress. And they have to break into the fortress. And they have Cillian Murphy convinced that he has to do this, that they're on his side, that Tom Hardy and Cillian Murphy and Elliot Page are all on his side. And they break into the fortress, and basically there's the genesis of the idea, and they've convinced him that it's of his own making. The film... So that's achieved, basically. The film then spirals because Leonardo DiCaprio meets his dead wife, and she convinces him to stay in this dream world where they've created cities and everything. And that's where it takes a bit.
But that's his own subconscious doing that, isn't it?
It is his subconscious, yeah, but it's also a real entity in the dream, so yeah. Everyone else can see it. So, but she takes him into this. I think he kills her. But then he has to stay in this kind of loop, this metal world of dream. And he finds, I think Saito, the Japanese guy, has died in the dream, at the third level of the dream. So he goes to this kind of world as well. They find each other, they come back, and that's it. Inception has been achieved. And I've told the whole story of the film.
Yeah. Just about there.
Okay.
But I think it's just amazing because to use like the least amount of CGI possible, like those kind of those great shots of like the prison was real. I was looking earlier, like the, you know, the explosions that they did in Paris.
Yeah, that was.
They
really
were just used with canisters.
But still shot as well, so they basically like froze it.
And the scene where the, you know, the rotating hallway.
That was real.
They actually built a 100-foot hallway that rotates.
I think that's the most impressive thing about the whole film. When
yeah.
you see this scene and you know that it's real.
You just think like they're turning the camera around or they're just doing something crazy, things with strings or whatever, but they're, your man's actually in a rotating hallway.
It's incredible. I'm going to say something maybe controversial, but I think it's Tom Hardy's best role in it. In a way, I'm going to say it. I think that Tom Hardy is a... I know it sounds a bit kind of reductionist or whatever to say that it's his best role. I know it's kind of taken away from him as a main actor, but I think he's better as a kind of a complimentary actor like that.
He does do like a lot of that. He's that in Dunkirk. He does that in Peaky Blinders.
Yeah.
Warrior.
Yeah. I just don't see him as a leading man. I don't know if he's got the...
Well, maybe he's just not picking the right movie. Like, he took the lead man in Venom, which wasn't...
It was awful.
But, like, he was the lead in Mad Max, and that was class.
Was he the lead in Mad Max?
I yeah, he was. Charlize
Theron was the lead in Mad Max.
His name's in the movie. The literal title of the film.
I understand that. But, like, even that... I really like Mad Max. But even that, it just makes me think that...
Well, he starred in this show called Taboo.
Apparently
I watched the first episode of that. It was actually very good. And he was the main character in Bronson. And
he's the main character in an independent film called Locke, which is about a guy who drives in a car and basically his life unravels on the phone call that he makes numerous phone calls. It's an independent British film. And he's quite good. He's very intense. I don't think it's range with him. I just think he's...
Legend?
He doesn't have... Yeah, Legend is good.
But
Legend is
so good.
I think you know what I'm saying. I just don't have the je ne sais quoi. Like.
What, that like Cillian Murphy has? Or Leo?
Yeah, I mean, Cillian Murphy felt like he was going to be a bit player for a long time.
I think he was biding his time.
I think Peaky Blinders did a lot for him. And then he actually just... I genuinely think he was always a little bit better than Tom Hardy and the ilk. But I think that he's really catapulted himself to that different atmosphere now, and I just don't know if
it just depends on the type of actor you are, like, because Leo only is the main character,
he's got incredible charisma. I don't know if Tom Hardy's got that charisma. Like, he's a bit gruff, he's a bit he's a bit raw though, do you know what I mean? And I like when actors are raw, but I just don't know if he's able to refine it in certain roles.
Well, for the scale of movie he goes for, it is hard to be the main character.
Yeah.
You gotta go for this A-lister.
And even
he is like, but he's not Leo, he's not bloody well Samuel Jackson, he's not Morgan Freeman, you know.
I thought that, yeah.
There is another caliber
that
you need for the films he goes for.
Christopher Nolan really likes him though, you know. But he hasn't played the main role in any of his films either. Like, even in Dark Knight Rises, he gets gazumped in the end, you know. He's not really the lead villain in the end.
But he's the villain in a comic book adaptation. He's gonna get killed, like.
Yeah, I know. But he's also like...
But he takes that film. He's so memorable as a villain.
No, he is, in fairness, like, you have to say. But he's also kind of, I don't know, overshadowed by the whole League of Shadows thing and Ra's al Ghul, and then Marion Cotillard's character does eventually turn out to be the actual bad guy in it, you know. But anyways, I know that's nitpicking, like. But I'm just saying, I just thought, I like Tom Hardy in this film because he could just kind of, he wasn't forcing anything, you know what I mean? But anyways, yeah.
Okay.
The other thing about Inception that I love is that whole family thing and like Leonardo trying to get back to his kids.
Yeah,
it's rooted in a very human story and it's done very well, and the scenes with him and his wife are brilliant. Like, they're actually brilliant. They're actually what kind of holds this film together, because it's a lot of complicated plotting and an explanation, and
just gives you a bit of a rest. It's the pace of the film as well, it just kind of switches up,
and it's really, it is excellent.
It took him 8 years to write the draft for the first draft, the script of the movie.
Wow.
Inception. He taught about the Inception, just a general idea of it for when he was 16.
Just these ideas are incredible. Yeah,
but they just came to him when he was 16, and it took him the majority of 10 years.
Wow.
To really, you know, flesh it out.
Mm. He got there, like, but just to even take on a project like that is just shows what he's at, you know.
I have a little one for you. So Miles makes reference to DiCaprio's role in Catch Me If You Can. Quote from the film, like, he's like, extradition between France and the United States is a bureaucratic nightmare. Cobb taught Miles as he discussed his plan to return home to his children in the US. The line is a reference to his role as Frank Abagnale Jr., who gets arrested in France and is sent back to the USA.
That's coolest. Yeah. That is a very cool fact.
Thank you.
Fair play. That is pretty cool, though. That's a little bit of Inception in Inception.
He likes doing that, though. Mm. Like, Nolan's kid was just DiCaprio's kid in the end of Inception.
No way.
Yeah.
Didn't know that either. Come with all the facts today.
Yeah, and he sprinkled his cousin in. His cousin was a flight attendant.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think of Inception?
From what I can remember, it was just a mindfuck.
Do you think it's too much? But
it was a spectacle.
Do you think it was too much, though?
I know. Just let him do what he wants.
Mm. Just enjoy
just let him breathe.
I think just enjoy these films, honestly.
But I think if you could describe Christopher Nolan films like that, it's like, it's a film festival movie on roids.
Mm.
It's like a movie that should be like, it's just the budget of it. It's a blockbuster that should be, it's the premise of like a really artsy film that we want to go to do the rounds of the festivals, but on a blockbuster budget.
Hmm. Maybe, yeah. I do not think it's made for big time, though.
Oh, I think it is, because if you really want to pull off these kind of films, you need a huge budget.
You need vision.
Because if the characters, like, if you don't, like, you... To make a movie likable, you do kind of have to recognize these characters. Like, it is a lot easier to get the big actors on board, to get serious CGI, whatever, all these special effects done.
But how could Inception be a...
It's more palatable for the average viewer.
But how could it be a small independent film? Like?
Could easily
is that what
be.
You're trying to say? Like?
Well, no, I'm not saying that. It couldn't be. I'm just saying the story of it, like the premise of like these films that they're so wacky.
So you're saying like there. A superhero film is like, is never going to be a kind of a festival film? Like?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I get what you
Unless
mean.
It's an unknown comic or whatever.
And is that because the premise is so complicated? Is that what you're saying? Like,
no, it's just so artsy. So out there, like.
But just because it's out there, just because it's beyond the realm of what we usually see in film, doesn't mean that it's meant for festivals or, you know. Festival films have a real, like, you know, a festival film. Like I watched Anatomy of a Fall recently, and it's a festival film, you know. It's close-in shots and very intense kind of dialogue.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's on a blockbuster budget.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Because of the scale of it up.
Mm. Maybe. I'll take your point.
Oh, yeah, and I missed a fact, actually.
Okay.
No. Okay.
Go on.
Okay.
Okay. Don't let me stop
there. Hans Zimmer created the score for Interstellar with a single page of information.
Inception or Interstellar?
Inception. No, sorry, Interstellar. You confused me. I said it right the first time.
Why'd
you gotta be like that?
Why are you going back to Interstellar?
Because I previously stated that I missed a fact.
I previously stated. Sorry. Okay. Well, say it again.
Alright, don't listen. I'm just gonna tell the viewers.
Just say one word. Okay, go. I'll close my ears. I'm not listening, I swear.
Right, it's a long one. Just sit back, okay?
Okay.
Hans Zimmer was...
No! Hans Zimmer!
Oh, I'm going to tell this one off the cuff. I'm not even going to read it.
Off the cuff. Okay, go. You're
basically,
lost
Nolan...
in the rabbit hole, you are...
Nolan rang up. He was like, "Hi Zimmer, I've got a movie if you're there, okay?
Yeah.
I need you to do a bit of a score for me."
Yeah.
So he just gave him a piece of paper,
uh-huh.
Okay? And all it said in it was like just the basic themes of the movie.
Mm.
And he wanted to make it really, he told him that it was like a real family-oriented film.
Mm.
So that's what he was kind of working the score around. He didn't actually know it was going to be sci-fi.
Mm. That's pretty
So cool. That's why the score is kind of like really emotional and why it works so well with like when McConaughey's like seeing the videos of his daughter and all this sort of crack.
Yeah, it's a great score. Hans Zimmer.
I'm just going to read them out. I'm going to tell the facts off the cuff for now on.
Let's move on to... I'll let you decide the next one.
Oh,
there's some great ones coming up.
Cheers.
There's also some poor ones coming up.
Okay, what am I looking at here?
Let me see.
Does that say episode?
Episode 2. Yeah, episode 2.
Okay.
This is the race. I'm the big research guy, you know.
Let's talk about your favourite film of the bunch. Dunkirk.
Okay. I don't like that you preface that. I was going to be kind of level about it. Just talk to you about why you like Dunkirk. Because I know a lot of people love this film.
I just love me a war film. Yeah. But it was a different type of war film. There wasn't crazy, outlandish just battlefield scenes, just shooting, killing, all this sort of crack. They just kind of played on like the reality of war.
Mm.
Like how boring it can be, but you know, how dangerous it is, like.
Mm.
But it plays on the scale of war. And like, you never really think about how they get there or like how they move machinery around. It's like, why can't they just do this or that?
Mm.
But like basically Dunkirk is about the mass evacuation of troops, the largest evacuation of troops ever in war. When in World War II, the Germans had the English troops backed up against the wall. There was only a little town in called Dunkirk in France. And there was over 100,000 troops.
Yeah.
Or something like that, anyway. A large amount of troops were left on the beach, and basically the Germans had the English beat.
Can you pull that up, actually, just how many...
They had them beat, so they were trying to get all the troops back home, the English troops, and that's what the whole movie's about.
Yeah.
How they got around that, and the way the Germans, just their different tactics about just picking them off and having the crack with them, really. They're only toying with them.
Call me, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, when I'm watching a war film... I want to see big, big epic battle scenes, and I get the intensity of
Dunkirk. But that's not what Dunkirk is.
I understand that. I completely understand that. And I think it's a great premise. I just think it's...
It's not Christopher Nolan-esque, because after the first time I watched it, I didn't know or couldn't tell. It was a Nolan film.
Yeah. I think it's one of the most unlike his films.
That's why he didn't get such a good reception from him.
It did. Dunkirk got a massive reception.
Well, from yourself, like?
Well, from myself? No, I don't think so.
But it isn't, like, recognised as a Nolan film.
But also, like, I think a film like that has to be backboned by really powerful performances. And I just... who am I following in that film?
Harry Styles.
Seriously, for a second. Who am I following in Dunkirk?
Harry Styles.
Yeah, Harry Styles. I'm following Harry Styles around a beach in France. I'm watching Tom Hardy with a mask on in a plane.
Okay.
Shooting
the film.
What? I'm watching Barry Keoghan on a boat. Like, who am I rooting for here? I'm seeing Kenneth Branagh standing on a pier. Blah, 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 blah.
Stop hating on our troops, man.
Our troops, did you say? Good old Brit.
Galadriel.
Galadriel. No, but you know what I'm saying, like.
Not really.
Just hear my point for a second.
No. I heard it. I'm not going to reject it.
Okay. But I find it very slow as well. I'm going to be honest with you. And I think that's...
But that's what he was trying to play on. It was slow. He was trying to build up the tension. What the troops were feeling. Because they were waiting on the beach for how long to be evacuated, and they couldn't.
That's the one thing. The one thing I did like the tension of the film. I think you can buy into that.
But
I don't see...
But it was really like...
But
you know,
I don't see the jeopardy. I don't see, like, who's going to die here and why do I...
The troops are going to die.
I know, I get...
But they're playing on if the Germans get them here now.
Yeah, I like that.
The world is lost.
I like that the Germans are kind of unseen, like, that it's kind of unseen force. I like that as well.
Yeah, that's cool.
But... And I like the scenes where they're flying over the beach and Tom Hardy is basically, like, protecting these troops from getting absolutely milled by these...
Yeah, he's the hero of it all. I suppose there's no, like, huge... character development or arc in it. Maybe that's what you're looking for, but it's a war film.
I'm not even looking for arc. I'm just looking for a
bit of substance.
Substance and someone to root for, like. And there's no one character where I come right. Every other one of these
I was rooting for the main character with the black hair. It's fairly unknown.
Mm.
Actor, no, but
the young fella. Was it the young fella?
It was, yeah.
Cillian Murphy's in there for like 5 minutes as well.
Yeah, but like you know, like, listen, we're gonna hate on Harry Styles if he's in a movie or not.
I don't hate on Harry Styles. I don't hate on him.
Clearly you are.
You said Harry Styles.
You're not
Styles.
A big watermelon sugar kind of guy, like, I can tell you
I
that.
I love watermelon sugar, Harry.
But he did it well. He didn't take away from the movie all that much, considering he was in One Direction.
He didn't take away, but he didn't add a whole lot either.
I think it's probably, it is kind of a strange play from Nolan to throw Harry in there, but it worked. For me, it worked.
Can you understand my gripes with this film? No. Do you really like it that much, though, do you?
No. But I have watched it, like, 3 times.
Mm.
So clearly, I must like something like
it. We watched it together, and I was really... I wanted it to be good.
I understand it's slow. It is a really slow movie.
And I like slow films sometimes, but they've got to have powerful performances. They've got to have...
There's got to be a big bad at the end. A big...
Yeah. There wasn't
the
even,
resolution at the end, but there
even,
isn't.
There isn't in this film. I just think it lacks... I can't believe I'm hating on Christopher Nolan. I'm not, but I just don't think this is his best project.
It was solid. It just needed a bit of a kick at the end, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think a kick at the end would have done a lot for it. Something at the end.
But I think the kick at the end kind of goes over your head, and you don't actually realise that it was that.
What is the kick at the end?
I think it's when he escapes the ship at the end.
Is it?
Yeah.
You watched it 3 times, like.
When they save Cillian Murphy. It's when Tom Hardy just shoots down the last Spitfire.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't a Spitfire. What do they call the German planes? Again, Spitfires are the British ones, but it's the...
I know, it's not Blitzkrieg and stuff like that. I don't know
that's a type of warfare.
I know that.
Clearly not.
I knew it wasn't a plane, man. I just don't like Dunkirk. I'm sorry.
Let's just move on from this film.
Okay, I'm sorry. To all of you guys who love Dunkirk.
Oh, before we move on, we've actually loaded up a clip.
From Dunkirk?
Mm. Mm.
Go.
Turn back.
Apologies.
You're an old fool. I'm not going back. Turn it around. I'm not turning around. Turn it around! Turn it around! Calm it down, mate.
Turn it around.
Calm it down, mate. George.
And then Barry Keoghan dies.
Yeah.
Rip.
That's Cillian Murphy when he's been saved and he wants to.
Wants to go back home, but
they're taking him back
to
Dunkirk to help
save out. More troops, and he's been a bit of a puss. So.
Yeah. Next film. I think we'll go with Tenet, just to get it out of the way. Another flop for me.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah.
I watched...
I mean, whatever about Inception, whatever about Interstellar.
But it felt very Inception-esque. But to be honest, it was just too much. I just didn't have a clue what was going on.
No, I don't think anyone had a clue. I read a factoid, this is my factoid, that Robert Pattinson apparently... for months during the shooting of this film actually didn't know what the film was about.
Yeah, that's tough on the actors as well, I think.
Yeah, I actually think he's quite good in that. He has a bit of
panache.
Yeah, he does. But John David Washington, I'm not sure, is a leading role. I think he was the
same. It had a very strong opening scene.
Yeah, it was very good.
The Russians or something.
They infiltrate this...
football game or something, was it?
No, it was an opera, I think.
Yeah. They're trying to get this covert kind of agent. They were going to torture him or whatever to get information out of himself.
Yeah. It was very strong, and I was like, ooh.
Yeah,
and
I was like, okay. Here we go. But then it just went over the top.
I haven't heard much about it, like, because I watched it, I think, in the first week.
The fight sequences and all that were really cool and interesting, but I think there's a line
with... We found the line.
Yeah.
I think this is it.
That's it. Like,
I think he found the line.
When you're watching a film, you want to know what's going on to a certain extent.
Yeah. I mean, I saw like...
Yeah, you can be left in the dark away, like, but it's... You don't... Like, you shouldn't have to look up a YouTube explained video on a film straight after watching it and still not knowing a clue. Have a clue what's going on.
was very confusing. And then it's like, what do you even talk about then? Because
yeah,
okay, it's shot well, it looks good.
And it was really awkward to film because they had to act backwards for those scenes.
Really?
Yeah. In some situations, the actor actually had to learn the reverse of their choreography or even learn how to speak their lines backwards.
But that must be very hard for an actor. Like,
yeah,
it
like,
really take
listen to this, your man, Kenneth Branagh, in particular.
Branagh.
Testament today. In particular, had to learn to speak his lines backwards in a Russian accent.
Do you know who he is, Kenneth Branagh?
No.
Gilderoy Lockhart in Harry Potter. You know the guy in Chamber of Secrets?
Oh.
You know the guy? Very well. I'll just get my things ready before he goes into the
dirty. Really fruity wizard.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
He's a con artist.
The con, yeah, the con man.
He's a very good actor, Kenneth Branagh. Tenet, yeah, as a whole, just lost on me, honestly.
Okay, I think I have it here.
Go on. What have you got? What have you got up your sleeve there?
In simple terms, Tenet deals with the concept of inversion, meaning that certain events play out backwards. Cheers for that.
Is that it?
Yeah. I just...
Yeah, we get that, like...
I had that thrown into my... It wasn't pasted in, like, it was typed in by myself.
So everything was going backwards in the film?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I don't know if it was a problem with the script or what, but it just never made sense.
You know what was cool was the whole airport scene was... The heist was very cool.
And the end bit when Robert Pattinson, I don't know how to even explain this, but basically he's from the future. And he'd gone back in time to help out.
Classic.
The main guy. Yeah, pretty classic-like. But he then had to go back into the future. This is what just...
No, he went forward into the future. Or you can only go backwards once...
Oh, stop. And we're confusing ourselves.
Because once you go back, time isn't linear anymore.
Okay.
Well, time is linear.
But then he had to go forward again. So once he'd gone back...
No, but once you go back in time, that is the present. So you can't go back to the future. You can only go backwards. You know what I'm saying?
I have no idea. I'm sorry. I'm actually trying to understand what you're saying. But anyways, he goes
back. I'm sure only our intellectual viewers will understand what I just said.
Intellectual viewers, if you can, please
AKA,
explain it to us.
Who could I even say?
I don't know. Do we have any intellectual?
Definitely not that guy from Donegal.
No. Oshin Davenport. He doesn't listen anyway.
I think at Cormac Reedy probably understand what's going on. I'd hope so.
You can explain it to us maybe.
Here. A real plane was crashed.
I heard this, yeah.
Yes.
I was
one of the most... Please. I'm speaking here.
Go on.
I'm doing the facts.
Go on. Fact man, go on.
One of the most memorable elements of the movie comes from Neil's plan to crash a plane into the Freeport.
Mm.
Okay?
Go on.
The scene itself looks incredible.
Okay.
Right, I'm just going to summarize this. This is crap. Okay? Crap synopsis of this fact. Anyway. They just crashed a plane.
Was that...
It was cheaper to crash a plane into the side of an airport than to do it with CGI.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, apparently so. He did make a profit from that one, though. He couldn't resell the plane, unfortunately.
I think that whole film was a loss, to be honest.
Yeah, rip. Okay.
We're going to go back in time now.
Do you want to do this one?
Yeah, we're going to go with the one that we both really like. I think most people that I've spoken to really like this film as well. The Prestige.
Which does kind of plays on time as well.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I really like The Prestige. Really, really like it. Hugh Jackman, Christian Bale, Michael Caine, David Bowie.
It's so good.
David Bowie is Tesla. I mean, that's pretty cool.
I like when they do that, though.
But even just start with that, like, got David Bowie, one of the icons of rock and roll, you know? And he plays this kind of mysterious...
He plays Tesla.
Mysterious, all-knowing father of electricity.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. But he... So, if you can explain the
premise. I'll give it a go. I haven't seen it in
briefly.
God knows how long.
I'll help you along the way.
Cheers. Thanks. Do you want to hold my hand?
Brief, yes.
Okay.
Hold your willy.
Don't. So, the film follows Hugh Jackman's character,
Hugh Jackman.
Who is an up-and-coming magician in the 1890s, maybe? 1880s? England? London?
Late 18, early 19, yeah.
Yeah.
Early 1900s.
Anyway, he's an aspiring musician and he is... He's a bit perplexed, like he doesn't know what's going on. How's Christian Bale able to pull out all these sleeves out of all these tricks out of his?
Yeah, Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman are working together at the start. With Michael Caine is this kind of.
Well, they weren't working together, man. Please.
Oh my God, go back and watch the film.
Maybe I will.
Michael Caine kind of works with the metrics of how magic tricks work.
Yeah. Okay.
So they're both magicians basically. As it goes along. Hugh Jackman becomes...
It's a bit of a rivalry between the two.
Yeah, so the rivalry erupts because of stuff that happens in the film with Hugh Jackman's wife at the time. And then... have I lost my train of thought?
Don't want to ruin it, but...
Well, so Hugh Jackman kind of becomes the showman. He's much better at putting on a show, where Christian Bale is a really good magician and he comes out with this... Brilliant
whopper of a trick.
Trick. So this is what it's built on.
Yeah.
This is this obsession.
That's the prestige, man.
The prestige, yeah, exactly. The prestige is how the trick is done. It's kind of like the
method behind
it. Yeah, the bit that you can't, that the viewer can't explain.
Yeah.
But it comes up with the prestige and a trick that has everyone perplexed. That has Michael Caine and Hugh Jackman. But Hugh Jackman becomes obsessed with it. So basically what happens is Christian Bale...
Don't ruin it.
Go on. So we'll leave it teased up.
Right? Yeah, because people got to watch this film.
This is a brilliant film. Okay, but he goes on. He tries to figure out.
It just
out
builds up to how he actually did it. But then, at the end of the day, it's left on a cliffhanger of what the prestige actually is, and it's jaw dropping.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's like it's a really nice twist. Yeah, it's like the last frame.
Mm.
You're like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
But there was two big twists in the movie as well.
We can't really say the last frame, though.
No.
Can we?
No, you can't.
There's
two big twists.
I want to whisper it, though.
No.
We'll say
I'm just going to watch it again.
Yeah, but... I've read reviews on this, and people reckon that it's not one of his best films. It's obviously not one of his best films, but it's so damn good.
It's fun. It's interesting. It's gripping. Like, it just keeps you going.
And the twists are as good as... as in any other film.
Well, yeah, because there isn't too many of them.
Yeah.
There's just two major ones that really just reshape the film. They keep you interested and keep you going.
Mm. I like the rivalry between Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale. Christian Bale is really kind of rugged and rough, and Hugh Jackman is this great showman.
Yeah,
he's a great magician.
That's it right there.
But he becomes obsessed with this perfect magic trick. It sounds goofy and all that, but it's really well done, I think. And as I said, bedded in with kind of really emotional stories as well. And blackmail and manipulation and...
There's just different layers to that film.
Really interesting.
I think that's the one... That's the Christopher Nolan movie that I think we're going to recommend.
Mm.
If you haven't seen
it. Oh, definitely, yeah.
Because I think people have like seen the majority of his films anyway.
I think
one does fly under the radar.
It gets lost because it was in between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight as well.
Yeah.
So it was a year after Batman Begins.
This guy just doesn't stop working.
No.
He just hops back on the...
Since 98, he's been on...
Back to the pen.
Back to the pen, back to the drawing board. But yeah, Prestige, get after that. Come to our last but not least, I suppose... Do you want a drum roll or?
Yeah, let me think of what the movie actually is first.
This is the last film. This is the 12th.
We spoke about this film before.
Yeah, we have.
It was a previous movie of the week, I think.
Yeah.
Everyone knows the latest film, Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer. Yeah, so this is perhaps the pinnacle of his career in 2023.
Certainly building up to it.
I think everything that can be said about this film has been said, you know?
Yeah. Listen, sure, I don't know what else we can say. Like, it's been all over the news, all over social media anyway, so...
It's been played out now.
I think everyone's probably gone seen it anyway.
Yeah, but its brilliance can't really be overstated. 3 hour film feels like an hour, just so well done, so well paced.
Do you want to leave it at that? We'll just rate the movie now.
We have a little clip from there, just to leave it. I think that this clip kind of sums up. We've got all these amazing clips from Oppenheimer, and yet nestled in there,
it's one of the coldest scenes. I think
it's so cold, and it's it shows the heartlessness of war as well.
And politics, and just
politics,
and who's really in charge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They have. And I hear you're leaving Los Alamos. What should we do with it?
Give it back to the Indians.
Dr. Oppenheimer, if what you say about the Soviets is true, we have to build up Los Alamos, not shut it down.
I feel that I have blood on my hands.
You think anyone in Hiroshima or Nagasaki gives a shit who built the bomb? They care who dropped it. I did.
Nagasaki.
Oh, cool.
That's brilliant.
Gary Oldman as...
He really told Oppenheimer to shut up, sit down,
yeah,
and let the big boys play.
Just when Oppenheimer is starting to doubt everything.
And he thinks he's the center of attention, and it's all his fault. He just really put it in perspective there.
Cuts him. He cuts the legs out from underneath.
And he waves that little handkerchief at him then.
Oh, yeah. How many troops were on the beach of Dunkirk?
338,000.
What?
Yeah. They evacuated him like that. They thought it would take weeks and weeks, but they only did it. How long did it take them, actually?
I suppose the civilian effort was quite cool in that. I'm glad that they kind of showed that.
Yeah. Basically, it was an impossible task, and they pulled it off. Basically, saved the world.
Yeah. So there you go. I like that aspect, but still not a good first. Anyways, are we ranking, Brian?
Yeah. Okay, I've got the 12 films in front of me here.
Are we going to go... Let's go film for film.
How many is there? Oh, that doesn't count, does it? 1, 2, 3.
So you've seen...
I'm going to do a top 10, because I haven't seen two of them.
So let me start off with my... So, disregarding the following, which we haven't seen, which is his first small-time feature film, I'm going to start off at number 11, so... And this won't come as much of a surprise, Dunkirk.
Mm.
I know that's harsh.
Work away, please.
So that's number 11. Like, go straight to number 10?
Yeah, work away.
Number 10. 10 Tenet.
Fair.
Go on. So you go your number 10 now.
Oh no, you just do all yours. There's a lot of them to go through, yeah.
Oh, it kind of takes the suspense out of it, though.
Oh. Alright, I'll do it off the cuff.
Go on.
Okay, so my number 10. Tenet.
Okay.
There you go.
Number 9 for me. Insomnia. And I want to give this film another watch. So, I mean, in my head, these might change a bit. But I think Insomnia is number 9 for me, just from what I remember.
My number 9?
Go on.
Dunkirk.
Is it?
Yeah.
So after all that, it's your number 9.
Well, I'm just looking at the ones here and they're just...
Yeah, they're too good.
Come on.
So after number 9, it gets really tough then.
Yeah.
Really tough. Like, Jesus, heats up. Number 8 for me, people might disagree, The Dark Knight Rises.
No.
It's a bit harsh. I know it is a bit harsh, but this list is harsh.
It's doing it a bit of an injustice, but I'm going to put The Prestige...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Well, let me just rethink. I'm doing off the cuff here. Yeah.
Prestige, okay. Number 7 for me is The Prestige. Number 7 for you?
Inception.
Inception?
Boom.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
Too much of a mindfuck.
Okay.
Well,
language.
Apologies.
Number 6, Batman Begins. Love that film. It's getting really
tough. Yeah, that's mine, number 6 as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, number 5 then. So you said, so number 6 was...
Batman Begins for both of us, yeah.
Number 5, Inception for me. We're coming to top 5 now.
Okay.
Go on.
So what do I have left? I have left Oppenheimer, The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar.
Okay.
I'm gonna go 4 lift.
Shouldn't.
But I do.
This is why you write it down.
1, 2, 3.
Tenet. Have you done Tenet?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, I don't. I do. Let me see your list. Apologies.
Apologies to the listeners. Lack of professionalism here.
Off the cuff, as per usual. Okay. Dark Knight Rises.
Okay.
Throw it in there.
Number 4 for me. Memento. That's what you're missing, is it? Oh, you haven't seen Memento?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, brilliant. So number 4 for me, Memento, yeah. Absolutely love that film.
I've only got 3 left, man. I've said the other ones.
Just one, top 3, so.
Okay, so my top 3 Nolan films. Number 3. Oh, you cunt.
Language.
Oppenheimer.
Really?
Yeah.
What? Number 3? Yeah. Wow. Number 3 for me, Interstellar.
Number 2, Interstellar for me.
Wow. Coming to my top 2 here.
What are you going to do? I know you loved Oppenheimer.
This is the big question of the podcast. What are you saying I'm going to say?
I think you're going to stick to your route, man.
You're right. Number 2, Oppenheimer. Number 1, Dark
Knight. The Dark Knight.
For both
solid,
of us.
Yeah. Had to be.
There you go. So, I read that out again. 11, Dunkirk. 10, Tenet. 9, Insomnia. 8, The Dark Knight Rises. 7, The Prestige. 6, Batman Begins. 5, Inception. 4, Memento. 3, Interstellar. 2, Oppenheimer. And 1, The Dark Knight.
Solid.
Yeah.
Mine was better, but...
Okay. You can't even say yours.
I can.
Go on.
I'm going to say it's number 9, okay? Number 9. Tenet. Number 8, Dunkirk. Number 7, Batman Begins. Number 6, Inception. Number 5, The Dark Knight Rises. Number 4.
Did you say 7, Batman Begins?
Did I say Prestige?
We'll wrap it up. Movie
it's been a long day.
It has been a long day for me. What time did you get up today?
What do you even do today?
7 o'clock. Went to work.
Oh, Monday. Okay, you got me there.
Yeah, good lad.
I was studying.
Movie of the week. The Whopper with Cheese.
Dalton.
Don, do it.
Roadhouse.
No, Dalton. This is funny.
What am I, a parrot?
Just do it. Please. Dalton. Do it.
No. You can't just pull a string.
Byron does a very funny Conor McGregor impression. Just in this film. I don't think you do a good one in general.
I think I do a very good Conor McGregor impression.
Come on, show the... Please, I'm begging you. Come on.
Alright, Roadhouse anyway.
Roadhouse, it was absolute crap.
No, it wasn't crap.
Roadhouse was popcorn. It was good crack.
TV to the max. It was just good crack.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it, I have to say.
But to be fair, the movie would have been absolute poo on the bottom of your shoe if Conor McGregor was not there.
That is kind of true, you know.
If he wasn't there, even though he's pretty chronic, like his acting is chronic.
Yeah.
But he was just being himself. And like the mix between like American, half American, then just full out the flats accent.
Oh my god, yeah.
Just mangled.
Some of the script is so bad. Oh my god. But it's
the story was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And
story made no sense.
The pacing was a bit off and there's no character development. Like you just
there's no like the normal.
But there's no who even was the main character? I felt like I know Jake Gyllenhaal like but
I think it was just like a real like action porn. It was just like, let's get Conor McGregor and Jake.
But I felt like they weren't trying to be that either.
I don't know what they're trying to do.
Because we were talking about this a few episodes of how the director was protesting because Amazon Prime weren't showing it in the film in theatres.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank God they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God they just kept it to streaming.
It was so bad, it was good in a way.
Yeah, it's classic.
The
fight choreography was pretty good.
Do you think so?
I enjoyed the...
People are slaving.
The fight at the end.
I mean, yeah.
Although it was hard to look at the fights. Like, it was just because they were using some sort of new new way of technology of filming fight scenes.
Yeah.
Where they'd film it obviously, but they'd get all the frames and they'd speed them up, and when they put them all together, it was almost like what do you call it when you get a load of pictures and you put them together?
Still frame.
Yeah. Still frame on roids. It's hard to explain what the technology is, but it's this new revolutionary.
I didn't even clock that, to be honest.
I was just. Did you ever notice like when they went to throw a punch, how sped up it was?
I was slightly inebriated at the time.
Legend. But do you not notice that it was a bit goofy?
Yeah, no, I genuinely can't remember that, but I just remember the whole thing being goofy. I just love Conor McGregor's lat spread the whole time. He's walking around.
Getting the traps going crazy.
His ass out as well at the start of the film.
Great intro for O'Connor, actually.
You loved that, man.
You did, yeah. It's pretty good.
You loved his ass. You said he had a good ass.
Did you not agree?
His ass was good, yeah. In fairness.
He's a high-performance athlete. I hope he'd have a nice ass.
High-performance ass.
There you go.
Rate Roadhouse, so let's wrap this up.
6.
What? Please give it like a 6 point or a 5 point.
All right, Connor was there. 6.2.
Jesus. 4.3, man.
Gotta look at the bigger picture, Connor.
What's the bigger picture?
Big movie guy with a podcast, like, come on.
Yeah, I am looking at the bigger picture. It's a 4.3 film, but it's a good 4.3. Ah, 4.5, so.
No. Since you said 4.3.
Since you convinced me.
Right, there you go. The Connor effect. A shout out to Post Malone, though.
Yeah,
he was very cool in the film.
Ripped. Not. Thought he could have gotten in shape for it.
He was a brawler.
I know.
See, he's hating on. Stop hating on the film.
I'm hating on no one. I love everyone.
Big time hater. You gotta respect these guys. They're putting themselves out there. They're making shitty movies, like, you know.
I know, yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
Blowing millions on the.
I'd love to know what the budget of that was now.
Oh, it's big. 50 million on Gyllenhaal alone. Don't look up the budget, man. It's not even worth it. Actually, do. Go on.
All right, don't listen. 60 million. US.
It's a lot.
So the whole premise of the movie is that they were going to destroy this
Roadhouse,
yeah. But I suppose they achieved that at the end. But it was just a bit. It's so anticlimactic, like.
It was really intense. And then he was supposed to get with that girl.
And he didn't.
She just left off.
And they tried to do a big twist with Jake Gyllenhaal going out with the corrupt chief of police's daughter.
Oh.
Just didn't hit.
It didn't hit at all.
Just went,
didn't expand on it at all. Anyways, let's wrap it up. 4.5.
Yeah, 6.2.
So, you call it a night?
Yeah, I got places to be, man. I'll see you later.
Sounds.
I'll leave you here on your lonesome.
To all you listeners out there, thanks so much. You guys are the lifeblood of what we're doing here.
We've been building up to this episode, yeah. Number 16.
Yeah, this is a big one for us, ranking Christopher Nolan. Huge hero of both of ours.
I hope we've done it justice, to be honest.
I think the world is a much better place with Christopher Nolan films. I mean that, so. Yeah, we've enjoyed doing it. Enjoyed researching it.
On my part, yeah.
Okay. Very funny.
Can you just continue the episode?
So
there,
I have been Colin Muldoon.
And myself, Byron Kenny.
The Big Kahuna Podcast, over and out.
Get turned off there.
Still not out.